You are listening to WDOT Radio. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Epic Entertainment Roundup. Today, I will be talking to Mark Pender. You know him as a vocalist and trumpet player of the Miami Horns, also from the Max Weinberg 7, the Conan O'Brien Show, and the Tonight Show. Mark has also performed with countless artists such as Bon Jovi, Bruce Springsteen, the Might Be Giants, Southside Johnny, and even Diana Ross. Please welcome to the Epic Entertainment Roundup, Mark the Love Man Pender. Hi, Mark. How are you doing today?
Hey, Gabriel. Nice to talk to you. How about yourself? Everything good?
Oh, yeah. I'm doing great. I'm in Schreiber High School right now, streaming out of the podcasting room, and I'm excited to talk to you today.
All right. Excellent.
So my first question to you before we start asking more about your career is, how'd you get into music?
It was all through, well, I always loved being around music and even, just around the house. Both of my parents sang, and then we all ended up going to church, and the entire family was in choir. And it just seemed like music was always around. And by the time I was in the fifth grade, there was a school band program, and I chose the trumpet, and that just kind of, just enhanced the direction I was already going in.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any mentors growing up?
You know, I feel like my life's just has been full of mentors. I had some teachers in public school. Ones that stick out really the most, it was Mr. Epstein in my middle school, who also played the trumpet. He took a great interest in me, and made music fun. And then later in high school, I had Mr. Carl. He was great. And luckily, I grew up in the Kansas City, Missouri area, and there was a jam session at the old Black Musicians Union, Local 627. It was called the Mutual Musicians Foundation, and a friend of mine told me to go down there because they had a jam session every Friday and Saturday night. And so I went down there, and I met just the most wonderful people. One of them was Orville Piggy Miner, who was a great trumpet player who had played with the J. McShann Big Band with Charlie Parker. And another gentleman that I met was also a trumpet player, arranger named Willie Rice. And Willie Rice actually gave me my opportunity to have my first full-time job in music. And he was just a tremendous mentor. And then if I continue on, I joined Charles Erland's band. He was a great soul jazz organist. And I learned, that's how I left Kansas City and ended up in North Jersey in New York. And then a few years later, I was lucky enough to meet La Bamba, Richie Rosenberg, and through a mutual friend who was also a mentor, Mike Spengler, great trumpet player who was also in the Jukes and toured with us with Bruce Springsteen and Diana Ross. And the relationships that I developed with those guys ended up meaning the world to me. And I really can't leave out Southside. Southside Johnny. He was and still is one of my greatest mentors. I feel like I've continued to learn from him. Moving forward, we joined Little Steven's band, Little Steven and the Disciples of Soul. I'm not sure how far I could have gotten without the things that he shared with me and the affiliation with him. And, the list just keeps getting longer. I could probably spend an hour talking about everybody who mentored me. And, God, I'm so grateful and thankful.
Looking back, like when you were in high school, did you ever think that you were going to be in the place that you are today?
No way. I did want a career in music, but I didn't know what that was going to look like. And I suppose we all have in our imagination, what it would look like. And so I held on to that. But when I started working and started getting out there and playing a lot, and I, you know, and especially my, just after high school, I was just playing so much, and for quite a few years after that, my vision of where I thought I was going to go changed drastically, and I found myself in a place that was actually much better than where my imagination had taken me when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm. And so you've had a very large career, as I talked about in the intro, and you actually played the Super Bowl halftime show with Bruce Springsteen. What was that experience like?
Well, I was, first of all, elated at getting the opportunity, and I'm a football fan. Growing up in Kansas City, go Chiefs. Looking for the three-peat this year. maybe it won't happen, but, you know, hey, you can always hope, right?
Of course.
So then the reality of the situation came. So we're getting ready to, you know, they assemble the stage in exactly 15 minutes. And, you know, the last play happens of the half, and now the stage is being assembled, and we're all standing there waiting to go on, and I'm just mortified. Just, you know, I'm having one of these anxiety-filled moments where I'm realizing that not only am I playing in front of this stadium with 85,000 people in it, but also there's 100 million people that are getting ready to watch. Mm-hmm. And it was almost debilitating. And, you know, I don't know for a fact, but I remember that Bruce seemed to have kind of that same energy. And I remember him, you know, I don't know, he went into the bathroom. I'm not sure if he was freshening himself up or if he was throwing up. But just from things that I've read and heard him say over the years, I wouldn't be surprised that there was a certain amount of anxiety, and he had 100 times more stuff resting on his shoulders than I did. But I was horrified at the prospect of it. But then when we rushed out to the stage and Bruce counted the whole thing off, all of that fell to the wayside. And, you know, I just remember, look, enjoy this moment. You'll never get a moment like this again. This is, just enjoy it and, you know, like, be it, you know, do it. And that's what happened. And I, you know, afterwards, God, I was just so on fire, just so up from the whole experience. Mm.
And to backtrack a little, how did you get involved with so many of these big named musicians and bands?
You know, it's, you know, there's some luck, you know, and then of course, you know, I always had a good practice routine, you know, try to better myself. But a lot of it is just by relationships that I developed over the years. Like I said before, like meeting Richie LaBamba and Ed Mannion and Stan Harrison and all the guys that were in the horn section at that time, you know, they've become lifelong friends just from like randomly meeting them. You know, that's really, I think, how things seem to fall in place. And you know, leading up to us getting the Conan show, you know, it was really meeting and hanging out with Max, and we had a little band together in the late 80s, early 90s. And that band became kind of the nucleus for the band that auditioned for Conan. And, you know, it was all like kind of relationship based and just word of mouth. You know, I never had an agent or anything like that. I mean, I did hustle quite a bit. You know, when you need to make a living from your art, there, you know, the component of the financial component can be challenging.
And so you were talking about how you were on Conan. What's it like to play trumpet on live TV?
Well, that's another one. It can be anxiety provoking, but for the most part, we did over 4,000 shows over the 25 years
Wow.
that we were with Conan. And I have to say, if we were still doing it today, I'd be thrilled. It was just such an incredible experience every day. You more or less kind of, you're able to live at home, able to be involved in other things, but also able to show up and work with extremely talented people and be influenced and educated basically by your association with them. It's just invaluable. To me, it was just an incredible experience, and especially the year that we were in New York made New York just such a great place to live. Because I had that, and I could, go into work every day and take the train home, and it was just, I felt like I was on top of the world,
And do you remember first meeting Southside Johnny? He was also, as well as Conan, a large part of your career was playing with Southside Johnny and the Jukes. And what was his what did his music mean for you in the New Jersey scene at the time?
Well, I think when I met him, I grew up in Kansas City, and I, started out playing jazz and blues a lot, and rhythm and blues, and funk music with the various bands. And so the horn section of the Jukes got asked to do a Diana Ross run, and it was one of the first like really great paying jobs that I had. And the trumpet player, for whatever reason, who was supposed to do it, couldn't or didn't want to do it. I can't remember. But so I filled in for him, and then the guys in the horn section asked me if I'd be willing to do a show with Southside Johnny when we got back to the New York area. And I didn't have a rehearsal. I needed to learn something like 32 songs and try to memorize them in a span of about 2 weeks.
Wow.
And I met Johnny, and I really didn't know that much about their band or their music, but I just loved the fact that it was so horn-filled, and it was also so energetic and fun. And it contained all those elements that I grew up with, like jazz and blues and rock and roll. It was just such a cool band. But I remember Johnny being, some of it was an act, but some of it was really him. I think he was slightly irritated that we needed a new guy. And I get it, having been a band leader a few times myself, if somebody suddenly leaves the band and you've got somebody else then that you don't know, it's a little bit confusing. So I remember after the first show, just Johnny walks by me and says, "I heard every mistake," and he slams the dressing room door, and that was the end of the first concert.
Oh, wow.
So cut to not too many years later, I'm living a couple of towns over from him in New Jersey. He was living in Ridgewood, and I was living in Westwood. We were hanging out 3 or 4 days a week. He'd become one of my best friends ever, and still is, really. It was, what a great relationship I've had with him. And, been in the band, left the band. And he was always really understanding that I needed to follow, a career path. And the times that I left and came back, he was really generous of spirit and, understood. He was empathetic about what it meant to be somebody who needed to, who was making a living playing the trumpet, which isn't particularly, the easiest path somebody could take.
Seems like the music industry is filled with love.
What's that?
Seems like the music industry is filled with a lot of love.
I believe it is. It really is. And it can be cruel, certainly. Sometimes the hard, cold facts of being fired and you know, all the things that go along with that. You know, a lot of times, especially for horn players, there used to be a saying that horn players had, last hired, first fired. Because a lot of times horn players are supplemental in a band, and the world lets you know that, you know, the music world lets you know that.
I myself actually play trumpet as well. I play in my jazz band at school. I play out of school. I just did a thing called NISMA in New York. I play for judges, and they, like, grade how I play, which allows me to get into larger ensembles. So that was, such as All County. And that was a great experience for me. I play jazz music a lot as well. And I've recently been studying a lot of famous trumpet musicians, and I've really been getting into jazz more.
Who are your favorites?
So currently, like, my favorite, definitely Miles Davis, obviously. Wynton Marsalis. I actually have a relationship with Wynton Marsalis. He's I met him one day after his show at jazz at Lincoln Center, and I've talked to him once in a while about jazz, and he's gonna help me get some help me speak to somebody for a teacher, and it's really cool. I really enjoy Freddie Hubbard a lot, Chet Baker, Dizzy Gillespie.
Yeah.
Those are some of my favorites.
All of my favorites. There's a new book about Miles Davis, Three Shades of Blue. It chronicles the life of Miles Davis and John Coltrane and Bill Evans. And,
oh, really?
You should check this book out. It just came out a few weeks ago, and it's a good. It takes you in the years prior to, but it really catches steam around the time that Miles Davis did Kind of Blue.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite parts of jazz is the improvisation style of it. So when you recorded with Stevie and Southside, did they give you input on arrangements? Did you get to improvise during the sessions?
Less with Stephen. Stephen very much had ideas about what his, you know, exactly what his parts were going to be. And Johnny would have some input, but actually let us, you know, either somebody would do all the horn parts, do a full horn arrangement, or we would come up with stuff in the studio or, you know, at rehearsal or whatever. And, you know, which is always fun. And honestly, I like both ways, because you learn something from, like Stephen's horn charts are very, you know, they're almost, they're not completely horn-like, but that makes them interesting.
Mm-hmm. And you played at Stone Pony in Asbury Park, New Jersey 50th anniversary show. What has the city of Asbury Park and the venue meant to you?
Well, I mean, you know, I really can't imagine, you know, a career without it, you know. There was always something going on down there, and honestly, all the guys that I made my career with, that was like a very important place and kind of the birthplace of New Jersey rock, really. And you know, look at how it's affected, you know, the worldwide, you know, rock and roll and rhythm and blues. You know, it's made its own niche, and the world has noticed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really cool being part of something, you know. Granted, I wasn't there 50 years ago, but, you know, when I started coming around in the early 80s, you know, and especially coming from Kansas City, it felt really good to be, like, part of a community like that. And you know, I've continued to be part of the community, even though I don't live in the area anymore.
Mm-hmm. And you yourself actually have the Mark Pender Band, playing a blend of R&B, jazz, and funk. Well, do you have any highlights from your Kansas City roots? Do you play original music or cover songs?
Well, on my recordings, I did mostly all original music. And, you know, I honestly haven't been doing the band that much. I've kept myself busy with other projects. And, you know, when I moved out to California, it kind of changed and of course, with COVID and everything, it kind of changed some of the momentum that I had behind everything. And right now, today I'm on tour with They Might Be Giants, and we're playing in Covington, Kentucky.
Oh, wow. And I saw on Instagram you playing a troubadour for Billy Gibbons' birthday. You were soloing and the crowd was going insane. When you're playing live, do you hear and react to the crowd?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Mm-hmm.
Do you enjoy the audience reaction?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that sometimes can give you, you know, you get a different perspective and different, you know, it changes maybe what you might have played if people are reacting. And if you play one thing and people react to it, maybe you'll still continue to go into that vein and you'll and try to explore it further. It's like what you were saying about improvisation. You know, that's the beauty of improvisation. It can change with whatever you're in front of or where you're at, the atmosphere, you know.
Yeah. And just to end off the interview today, if you had a final piece of advice for any young musician such as myself or others that are listening to this show that want to become go into the music industry, what would you have to say to them?
What I would say is, you know, it's really different atmosphere than it was when I was growing up because there was a lot more venues that had live music. That being said, I think that young people have, through the internet and through, you know, various apps and whatever, you have a way of sharing an awful lot of music. My advice would be play with everybody and do as much, you know, play as much as you can and learn as much as you can. And put yourself out there. And, you know, even if it's just like going in somebody's garage and playing for the afternoon, you know, the playing with other people is where you're going to grow. Mm-hmm. And of course, always, you know, the thing, you know, you really need to practice, you know, you need to like make sure that you have something. But a lot of that means practicing the right way. The other thing that I would say that I've always felt like was really important to me, there was a point when I moved from Kansas City to the New York area, it was quite a bit more expensive, and it was really difficult to earn enough money to make a living with the music that I had. So some of what I feel like I would say at this point would be like try to find a way to earn enough money to support yourself with it, and then that'll take you in places you never expect as well. You know, there's been a few times where I had to supplement what I did with day jobs, and there's nothing wrong with that, and I would encourage guys to do that while they're starting out because that's really important. You know, you can't, you know, the bohemian lifestyle is only good up to a certain point. And you know, I was motivated. You know, I didn't have really a plan B. I don't know if that's advisable for everybody, but personally, I only had the plan to make it as a trumpet player, and I just continued to follow that. And you know, it had me make choices that, you know, solidified that.
Oh, Mark, I want to thank you so much for taking time today to talk about you and your music. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
And you as well. Thank you. And, you know, keep up the good work. Everything you're telling me is, it sounds like kind of what I just said, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, once again, this has been Gabriel Jaffe, and today I leave you with a quote from Albert Einstein. With me, every peep becomes a trumpet solo. Thank you.
Thank you.